Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Sportsman. We've got a very special one coming to you guys today. But first, as always, Mikey V, Joey D, I'm the big ticket. First guest, really. I mean, Joe and I did one a long time ago, but this is our first real guest. Certainly the first one we have with Mikey V and our first athlete. So today,
first athlete's huge.
Yep. First, we have starting guard, UNC Tar Heels, number 3. Cormac Ryan. Very happy to have him on the program. What are you?
And let's bring him in.
What?
And let's bring him in. Let's bring him in because tickets Wi-Fi. We don't know. We don't know how much longer
it's got. Oh, this is a choppy Wi-Fi.
We don't know how much longer it's got. And there he is.
Oh, welcome.
Wow. That's a nice backdrop, man. That is a nice backdrop. That is a
how
nice
we doing?
Backdrop.
Clap it up. Clap it up.
Hey.
Look at the Tar Heel behind him. That's sensational.
Dude. Hey, Mikey, I see you.
I got some little light blue on there too myself.
The ACC Player of the Week, Cormac Ryan. Can we say the Blue Devil Killer, Cormac Ryan?
we can
the record-setting performance in Cameron Indoor Stadium.
Sensational.
Cormac.
Yeah. And I just want to start off by saying that you're our first ever athlete on The Sportsman. So it's our 100th episode and our first athlete. So a big, big one today. We're so thrilled to have you on here, man.
I appreciate that. What an honor. I had no idea. First ever. That's insane.
Yeah. Well, very deserving of it, Cormac. And coming off of that fresh performance Saturday against the Dukies, I'm sure you're in a very good way right now, as are the boys. How are we feeling heading into the ACC tournament, my friend?
Oh, man, we're feeling good. We're fired up. I think it was, there's nothing better than walking into that building and coming out as champs. They kind of wrote us off going into that game. I think, you know, not that we look at these kind of things particularly, but you know, the line was a little aggressive for the Blue Devils. I think the odds were against us, and look, that was like, it was for a share of the title for the regular season, and there's nothing worse than splitting it with your rival. And so we went in and handled business. So we're fired up, man. We're going to DC fired up.
It's awesome, man. You guys swept them, so I don't know why that was the case. Break, I have a question for you, because you mentioned, you know, looking at the lines. Do you guys take much in terms of, like, when you see a line like that that you think is a little bit maybe on the tad disrespectful side, does that, like, fire you up at all? Or does that change, like, your preparation or your mentality going into the game at all? Or is that something you don't really focus on?
It's crazy because, like, when I started college way back, when I'm like the oldest guy in college basketball, which is like
Stanford to Notre Dame, UNC.
Yeah. Via New York, correct?
Via New York City, yes, sir. Born and raised in New York City.
So there's no need to have the conversation about best pizza or best bagel, because Cormac already knows who reigns supreme in that arena.
That's right. And there's not a lot of good pizza, unfortunately, anywhere else, I've traveled the world.
That's right. But we're spoiled.
Like, we're spoiled, and you know that.
Yes, sir.
When I first started playing, there, like sports betting, especially, like, you know, with college stuff and like, it wasn't as big. Like, it just, like, it was big, but it wasn't as, like, like publicized, like on the telecast and everything. Like now, like you're watching the college game days of the world, you're watching ESPN, the line, like the line's everywhere, the over-under's everywhere. Like
it's crazy.
It is what it is. It's good. I think it's good for the sport. I think it brings more people in, but like people are like, oh, you should never know the line. You should never know this. And that's right. Like, you know, we focus on the game, we prep for the game, but like it's advertised, like it's just advertised before and after, during, like, you know, it's a big part of the sport now, which is kind of wild. Cause like literally in 5 years it's changed. Like my freshman year, you couldn't find, like the line was not on TV. It wasn't on the pregame show. Like it just wasn't. And now that's like all anyone can talk about is what the spread is, you know, what, who's got what, you know, so.
Sports gambling's taken over, man. It's insane.
Tar Heels,
it's be hard to
Tar Heels have done very well for the only substitute.
Right, see, I don't know. Hey, listen, as long as the Brotherhood's eating, as long as
the only substitute, man, shout out. That's right. That's right. Now, we did, Cormac, we did put out a questionnaire for viewers to be able to ask you some questions. So we'll definitely have some questions about that. But I know we can't overlook the ACC tournament. Obviously, that's a big deal in and of itself. But getting ready for the big tournament and March Madness to start very soon, how is the overall vibe? And obviously, it's a little tough when you still have games yet to play. But the overall vibe, you think, heading into the big dance, and where you could see this team going? Because preseason, all jokes aside, I did say that I thought coming off of last year and then adding you from Notre Dame and you know, RJ Davis now, obviously the season that he's had, he's been unbelievable. Your coach winning coach of the year in the ACC, like all this stuff coming to fruition for you guys. And I'm a big Baycott guy too. I think he's tremendous. How do you see your guys' chances in the big dance? Obviously I know you know, as a player, your competitiveness, you're going to say that you're, you know, one of the top teams and contenders, but how do you feel heading into the big tournament?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I think honestly, it's not only can we not overlook the ACC tournament. I think it's important for us to win the ACC tournament for our seeding. Honestly, like I think we win the ACC tournament, we've got a really good shot at a one seed. And that for us, like, there's all this bracketology nonsense that's hard to follow. Honestly, it, like, even when you're in the middle of it, like we know everything. We've seen all these teams all year. It's hard to follow, like where you're playing, who you're playing against, like. You can't get wrapped up too much in that because you'll just kind of lose focus of, you know, what you need to be focused on. But I think for us, like our group, like you said, they had kind of that crazy run 2 years ago at UNC to the finals as an 8 seed, up 15 at half in the national championship game, end up losing in a very tight game, heartbreaking stuff. And then their preseason number one last year, tough season, you know, stuff happens. Basketball happens. It's a crazy sport, especially college. They don't make the tournament. And so it's like, all right, well, now it's like you've had the best of the best, basically, and then the worst of the worst. So it's like you're splitting the difference. And year three with Coach Davis and our crew this year, like, has been so far so good. Like, we have had a pretty successful season. We wanted to win the regular season. But like March is a different animal. It just is. Yeah. Because you get these teams like, everybody, I mean, you talk about hungry, like the big dance, your winner go home. It just is what it is. And these teams are good. They're different from who you play all year. They're not usually from your league, which is why you get all these upsets, because you're getting different styles. You're getting these teams super hungry. But I like our chances. I think we've got a really talented group. We've got an older group, which helps. We've got guys who've been there before. We've got a deep team. We've got a lot of guys we can go to on the bench who come in and are just tremendous players for us. And so obviously it's one game at a time starting Thursday in the ACC tournament, but we're excited, man. Like, we're excited to get to the big dance and you know, make a deep run, hopefully go and end up in Phoenix cutting down nets.
Would you think that maybe like not coming in as like the, you know, undisclosed one seed maybe takes a little bit of pressure off? Obviously you want to win the ACC tournament and I hope you guys do, but I think this season up until now, you guys have kind of been a little bit forgotten about, and maybe that, you know, I think there's so much pressure coming in to a big tournament like this as the one seed that sometimes, you know, you got all these other teams gunning for you. Do you agree with that? Or do you think it's really irrelevant? It's just, you know, it's based off of who you're playing in the matchups and whatnot.
Yeah, it's a good point. Like when you're ranked number one obviously there's like the whole narrative of like the 1 and 16 matchup. And like you see Purdue last year, like FD comes storming in and you just get some gritty guys. Like you get St. Peter's, you get a couple of Jersey guys battling and
they're knocking off. Tough guys in Jersey.
No, they're
scrappy guys, battlers.
They are, hey, and they play different. That's the thing. It's like these teams are built differently. They're not always kind of what they're used to, like what you're used to seeing. And teams, I think, can get tired in their conference. They're just seeing a lot of the same. And then you get into the tournament and you just play a completely different team. So honestly, like, again, like 1 seed, 2 seed, wherever we end up, it's just you got to win the game in front of you. And that's just the mentality. It's just as simple as that. I think if you do too much calculating of like who we're going to play, where we're going to play them, like that stuff gets dangerous quick because, you know, you're thinking a little bit too much. So it really is. It sounds cliche, but it's like you show up and you've got to win the game in front of you. And it just is. That's just how you got to do it, especially in March.
Who's the most physical team that you guys played this year in conference, do you think? Was it Duke? Because, you know, Duke is known, you know, they played pretty good defense this year. But in terms of physically, like, after the game, you felt like a little beat up after the game. Like, man, they really, like, are tough in every aspect, running the floor, boxing out, everything done at a very physical level. Who would you say was the most physical team you guys went through this year?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, we played Tennessee in the non-conference, and they've got Rick Barnes. They're always their MO is like, we're going to be physical. We're going to be tough on D. We're going to be physical. We beat them at home.
Yep.
Which is a great game for us, kind of set the tone early in the non-conference for us, but they're physical and that's kind of what they do. That's what his brand is. I would say like in conference, Clemson's pretty physical. You know, Coach Brunell there, like they play physical, they crash the glass.
Tough game for you guys, that one game against Clemson.
They set good screen. And so we got them at their place. They were ranked, you know, like 16th or something. And we went down there and won by 10 double figures on the road, which was great. And then they came in here, kind of, we came out sleepy. Wasn't our best
game.
First
time they beat you guys in like 15
games. Was that after the first Duke game, that game?
It was.
Which
is tough. And that's a reality of sports. That was a quick turnaround. I think it was a Saturday, Monday or Saturday, Tuesday. It comes quick and they're a good team. Like they're a good team and you get beat, you get beat by anybody in this league. It's a good learning lesson. It's better to do it when you win. It's better to win an ugly game and be like, oh, you know, that was close, but good lesson for us, you know, good lesson.
For sure. Hey, you know what? You can't do without a little bit of adversity. And by the way, Mikey mentioned Duke. If you ever listened to the Sportsman Show before, he said he thought Duke could do it all. So I think your guys' performance this past week might have changed his impressions, hopefully. And now he might have had, you know, a different team in there aside. One would hope so. But I want to ask you a fun question because I don't want to be too serious. Obviously, you had an unbelievable game this past week. And I got to ask, like, because I know me, I'm a little bit of a nut job. When I had a good game.
You're a sick pop, Joe.
I am. Yeah. I got a little fuses. Not
oh,
right
you really
upstairs.
Are.
I like this Cormac kid, let me tell you.
Yeah, me too.
My question is, after a big game like that, like, do you have like a go-to meal? Like food's just got to taste better.
It's a great
you're the player of the week. Like is it like a steak dinner you're doing after, or you're just doing a full pizza, or like what's a go-to dinner for you after a big game like that?
That's a great question. So I'll give you a little bit of insight into the post game. Cause as much as I would love to be able to go out for like a big time meal, like I'd love to just grab my family or whoever's at the game, the boys and, Let's just hit a steakhouse. We do usually after a game, especially like a night game, we're going to do they'll just cater food from like a restaurant, like a local restaurant, like that's in our locker room. So like we'll basically play the game, win the game. And then we've got food on the bus. For the Duke game, it's a little different because the tradition here in Chapel Hill is when you beat Duke, the entire student body and the entire basically city of Chapel Hill storms what we it's called Franklin Street. It's like our main strip. And it's a pretty insane scene, honestly.
I saw you on top of the bus this week, Ryan.
Listen, I was on top of the bus. I ended up.
I saw you on top of the bus.
You call me a sick puppy. You're right.
I was on top of the bus. I mean, listen.
It was the Cormac Ryan game. It was dubbed the Cormac Ryan.
Fair enough.
Guy dropped 31 against the Dukies and Cameron. You're going to walk on top of the bus.
So our coach, Coach Davis, came in the locker room and was like, you know, we're celebrating. We're throwing waters around. Like, we're fired up. He's like, we're going to take the bus to Franklin Street. And we're like, let's do it. Let's do it. So we drive the bus basically into a mob, like into a crowd of people. Not at full speed, obviously. We slowed down. But, that sounded bad. We didn't drive the bus into the people, but so we're surrounded by everyone. So we go out of the bus and it's crazy. And listen, like, this is my first year here, so I'm new to this whole thing. Like, this is nuts to me. And it's nuts in general, but it's nuts to me. Like, we didn't, as great as Notre Dame was, as great as, you know, Stanford was and other college, like, I don't know if there's anything like this in terms of, like, there's people, as far as the eye can see, people are screaming, you know, throwing stuff, water's going crazy. We did that. People are chanting, playing music. And we get back on the bus and we're, you know, we can't go anywhere. We're surrounded by people. And you know, we've all been on coach buses. They got those little hatches, like the little emergency hatch.
Yeah.
So I get one of our big guys over there and I'm like, yo, you got to help me get this thing open. And he's like, let's do it. And so we're like, we're fiddling with it. He like punches through the thing. It pops open. And I'm like, dude, I'm getting on the bus. So I climb through, they hand me up the trophy. A couple of the guys get on. So I'm like on top of the bus. Like,
that's nuts.
It was nuts. It was completely nuts. Little slippery up there. So I'm glad I didn't fall. It would have been a tough.
Oh man, forget it. Forget it. That was my first thought. Honestly, I was like, you got to protect the assets here, man. I was like,
that's what my mom said.
I'm a dad. So it's like, that was my first thing. Like, Cormac, get down off. Get down from there. We can't afford any kind of an ankle twist right before the tournament starts.
No, that would have been from like hero to zero right there. I would have been on like top 10, like sliding off the side of the bus, squashing some freshmen. But yeah, no, it was fun. Fun night, really.
Did
fun.
You get dinner after the bus or what did you guys do?
Yeah, so we did.
I'm really intrigued about the dinner guy. I'm really
big dinner guy. What do we do? No, I think we ate our food on the bus, honestly, and just went right out. We have Saturday night. We got together, kind of went out on the town.
Do me a favor, Cormac. If you guys win March Madness, go get yourself a good steak dinner. Okay.
Well, we're gonna
treat yourself. You deserve a nice dinner. You know, I'll be rooting for you. And by the way, if I'm anywhere in the vicinity, you just like hit me up.
Do you see how this is going? This is
like a 20-minute ploy to get a dinner invite with the.
That's right.
You're invited. I guarantee it.
We'll be out in Arizona.
Reasons of my own. I hope you win for your own personal benefit and your own history and like your, you know, the personal. Like, you know, amazing story that would be. But I would love to be able to witness that. I think it would be sensational.
The win or the dinner?
Well, I will be watching, but the dinner. Bob and I are big dinner guys. It's just.
I know.
There's really nothing better than when you're with your friends.
No, it's.
Celebrating a moment. It's just like time stands still.
Cormac, these guys live for dinner. Anytime we're filming an episode of Bob Does Sports, all they can think about is how good dinner's going to taste.
Oh, yeah.
Because they worked hard. They filmed two episodes that day.
I'm there with you. I grew up doing, we called it late long dinner. Like you go late night and you go long and you sit, you close the restaurant down. And I grew up like growing up in the city. These places stay open late. Like they start, I'll sit down to dinner at 10 PM. Like we'll sit down, eat till midnight. Like it's that's how the Ryan family rolls. So I'm all on the dinner train. I agree. There's nothing better than just locking in for just great banter, great food. Awesome. Can't beat it.
That's right.
Sounds like the Ryans and the DeMars could have quite a
dinner. Listen, we could make something happen.
Hey, if you're a subpar golfer, you know, maybe we'll get along really well too. We could actually play toe to toe on the golf course together.
That's right.
That's a good question. Do you dabble with golf?
So I just like first of all, I'm a big Bob Does Sports guy. I love your guys.
Wow,
it's true. I you guys got You guys got the gift, man. It's fun to watch. I just started golfing this year, so I'm not good. I'm not good at all. I think
I've golfed for a long time and I'm not good either. So
that's right. I mean, you're not bad though. You're not bad though, Joe.
I'm okay. I'm okay.
You got some oomph in your game, which I don't have. Like that's something I don't have. But based on like the guys who I've golfed with who are know what they're doing, their theory is that given enough time, like any type of athlete can kind of pick it up. And I think they're right. Like I'm not terrible and I haven't golfed much. So I'm confident, like if I gave it the amount of practice, like if I just played, you know, 4 or 5 times a week for a couple weeks, like I would get to a point where I'd be okay. But that being said, I haven't done that. Cause it takes a lot of time. Like that's the thing, like practicing, playing, like golf is like, it's not as easy to rep and get better at. So like I'm trying to get better. I'd love to, like I don't even have clubs. Like I need clubs. Like my guy is gonna.
You got March Madness to worry about first. So let's not get too worried about the
clubs. And then Cormac, the dinner to worry about.
Yeah, Cormac, make sure if this guy hits you up for a dinner, tell him to tell Callaway to send you a nice set of clubs. Okay, there's a little exchange there. All right, make sure there's
we'll do a little tip for tat. We'll do a little tip for tat.
Good March Madness showing out of you. We could get you in Callaway clubs pretty quickly, my man.
Good March Madness showing out of you.
This guy's unbelievable, man.
Jesus. Unbelievable.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Jacob, what were you going to ask
me? I have a question for you, and I apologize. I've been a little quiet just because my Wi-Fi is just atrocious, so I kind of wanted to stay out of the way. But I am curious, you touched on how special that Duke-UNC rivalry is, and, you know, growing up in Manhattan. And then I believe you went to Milton, I think, for school. Right. And high school, and then Stanford and then Notre Dame. How long did it take you coming in and playing for UNC before you were like, okay, I get the rivalry here. I understand it.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty right away. It's pretty immediate. I think part of it too is like, I think everybody gets it to a certain extent. Like, even if you don't go here, you know about it. And it's like, I think it's the greatest rivalry in sports. And it's a good dinner debate topic, I'll tell you that. Like, you could talk about, you know, Red Sox, Yankees, Celtics, Lakers, you know, Barca,
Bears, Packers. Madrid,
Bears, Packers. Like, there's some legendary rivalries. Ohio State, Michigan's one. That's a serious one. Like the Duke Carolina one's in the conversation. My argument is because it's like, there's never been a year or a period of years where it didn't really matter or wasn't really close. Like if you look at the stats, they're kind of scary. Like it's almost to the point tied, like over the course of 50 years, it's nuts. So like everyone kind of knows about the rivalry coming in. And so you're like, yeah, Duke Carolina. And then when you're here, it's like, it's real. Like it gets real quick. Right. And that the buzz around campus, like we played them here first. We play mid season and end of season and it alternates. So we played them here first and the buzz on campus was like unbelievable. They had College Game Day here. You know, everyone's got the signs, it's going crazy. And then the game itself, like we'll sell out every game, which is cool. Like we've got an amazing arena. The Dean Dome will sell it out, 22,000 seats, but for some reason, like the buzz, like in the gym when it's the Duke sellout is different. It was completely out of this world. Like you kind of just black out. You don't even know what's going on. And then obviously going into Cameron, it's like they're sleeping in tents. I didn't even know really about this tenting.
Yeah.
One of the most ludicrous things I've ever heard.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. You got grown men. Grown men and women sleeping outside for months.
I've never understood
It's not for me.
I couldn't imagine it's for anybody, but I'll tell you this. When you look in the student sections after the win and you're like, you guys slept outside for months for this.
That's great.
Pretty sweet. It's pretty sweet.
That's great.
I have a question from the Jet, and I told him that we were interviewing you today, and it's a very interesting question, which I didn't even know, but he was like, you got to ask him this. So apparently in Duke, the basketball like the Nets are suspended from the ceiling, whereas all the other courts, they're just from the ground up. His question was, does it make a difference when you're shooting on the basket? Apparently, you're better on that.
I've liked it a couple times.
Maybe that's what you need for moving forward, because that was unbelievable. But he asked if there was a difference, a significant difference you found when you're shooting on a – I didn't even know that.
Yeah. It's interesting. Basically, what he's talking about is most of the – every college has, like, the stanchion. So it comes up from the ground. Looks like the NBA hoops, you know, the one Shaq breaks the backboard, the thing falls down. Like, this one is, because Cameron's so small, it's literally like the size of a public school high school gym. It's tiny. Like, they pack 10,000 people in there. But, like, if you walked in there when it's empty, you'd think you're almost in the wrong place. Like, I remember the first time I walked in there, I couldn't believe how small it was. We walked in there for shoot around a couple years ago, and I was like, you know, this is it. Like, it's tight. Like, it's a tiny gym, so they can hang it from the ceiling. I don't know if it makes a difference. I think it is a little different for maybe the first couple minutes of warmups, but I think everybody by this point has played enough basketball. Like, it's honestly kind of the same. I mean, it's regulation height, like, it's all fine. It honestly reminded me of back in, like, high school, you play on some of those, you know, with a basket down from the ceiling, and they put it back up for the volleyball.
They would crank it. Remember, they would crank it.
Yeah, and you got the poor janitor over there, cranking on his shoulder.
You needed the key, Mikey.
Yes.
You make friends with the janitor. So when it's after hours, you tell him, yo, can you bring 100%. The hoops down? You got to bring the hoops down. It's kind of like that. But that's a very astute question from the Jet.
I tell you what, man, this guy's mind works in a way that no one else can comprehend.
Yeah, he's got a beautiful mind, that guy does.
Beautiful mind and a wonderful scowl.
Tick, do you want to read some of the audience questions?
Yeah. Let's get to it. We've got a few questions here. We asked some of the fans some questions for Cormac. And the first question comes from Richard Patterson. He wants to know your favorite moment this year sweeping Duke. If there was one moment between the two games sweeping them that really sticks out to you, probably other than the bus thing.
The bus was probably big. The bus was big. I will say that's definitely going to be a memory for life. I would say this most recent one, since it's fresh, is definitely sticking out. I've always personally liked playing road games more. I think if you looked at the stats, I bet you I probably play better on the road. I don't know why that is. It's just, I find it easier to get going when everyone's, like, basically telling you to go, you know, F off, kill yourself. But it's, I just like it better. So I would say probably the Duke game at Cameron. One of the moments that I was just, like, honestly stunned about was when my boy Elliot, number two, Elliot Cadeau, at the end of the game, hit like a double pump end of shot clock, which was really like a dagger. It was like they were kind of clawing back. We were not doing the best job closing the game out. And he threw up kind of a prayer, like end of a shot clock prayer, and it went in. And we had been, like, a couple times this year, we had been beat because of something kind of like that, like a shot banks in from half court, or like a guy's throwing up some nonsense at the end of the clock and it goes in. So we'd been on the receiving end of a couple of those. And so to see one kind of go our way in that game, to really kind of put the nail in the coffin, I was like, I literally, like, put my hands shot up. I couldn't believe, I was just so happy. I would say that probably, you know, his shot right there was all, and then kind of just the whole moment, like the whole winning and walking off was fun.
Was taking a look at your home and away splits, and your 3-point percentage on the road is 40% on the road. As opposed to 30% at home. There's something to the away. I said on the one UNC pick that the UNC Instagram, when they put up that picture of you, I said Cormac's on demon time in this picture. Because it looks like he is completely enamored with the villain role. And Cormac, in my defense, you put up a picture of the Joker on your last post. Riding in the cop car. So I think he does embrace that villain role. I think there's something to that, which is news for everybody in the NCAA tournament, because those are all technically away games. So that's bad news. Yeah. That's bad news.
All right. We got another question here from, this one comes from Alice Wartz Humphreys. She wants to know, have you ever run into any of the Duke players while out at the bars or getting something to eat? Because, yeah, what is it? It's only like 8 or 9 miles down the road.
Yeah, it's close. It's way closer than I thought, actually. It's like a 20-minute drive, like maybe less, which is kind of wild when you really think about just the chances of two schools being that close, ending up in such an entanglement here. But the answer is no. Chapel Hill and Durham are pretty separate when you're down here, especially as far as like universities go. I don't know if that's by design, because it's like, I don't want to go over to Duke and they don't want to come over here, because it's like a pride thing. But like, you know, we're out and about. I'm basically going to stay here. Honestly, mostly just it's boring, but for like convenience, like I don't really feel like driving 20 minutes to go to a bar over there. And I think it's the same here, but I'd be curious. Like, I don't know. And it doesn't strike me as there's been too many like friendships of Duke and UNC players like over the years, in terms of like, you know, we're going to be buddies off the court and go grab a beer after the game. Like, I don't know of many, if any.
That's the way rivalries are supposed to be.
And it's supposed to be. It's the way it's supposed to be. And that's the way I kind of operate too. Like, you know, I don't usually have many friends on opposing teams. It's just like kind of that. It's just kind of the way it goes. Like,
yeah, I appreciate that. I'm always one to be like, well, because, you know, I'm a Bears fan. So when I watch a Bears game and they play the Packers, and then I see we always lose to Joe's Packers. I mean, everyone knows that we always lose to the Packers.
Yeah.
There's nothing more infuriating than getting our teeth kicked in by Green Bay, and then the game's over and these guys just go over and they start hugging and kissing and laughing with each other. Yeah. It's just, I get it. You secured the bag. I understand that. I respect that. No doubt about it. But like, you know, just have some respect, I feel like, for the rivalry. So that's refreshing to hear that, because I think that is more of a college thing. Like, I just feel like the college, and that's why I love college sports. Like, I tell these guys all the time, college football, college basketball, in my opinion, is so much more fun to watch than the pro version. Yeah. And I think it is because of that level of intensity and how you guys have so much pride in those rivalry games. They're just, to me, they're just wildly entertaining because of that.
Yeah, I mean, like I agree. I find it odd, actually. Like, a lot of times, I get it. And like you said, the pro is a little different. You've made your money.
Right.
A lot of times, you've maybe even been traded from a team. You might have played with the guys. So I get there's some differences, but like two games ago, like we played Notre Dame, and like I'm friends with some of the guys on the team still. Like, good friends. Played with them for, you know, a number of years. But like on game day, like I don't. There's no disrespect. I'm not going up to hug you. I'm not going up to like, and I don't think they want that either, because it's like, you know, we're playing each other and like we beat them by, you know, however much we beat them by. I'm not going to be like giving them bear hugs after the game. It's kind of like, you know, we're good friends. I'll text you in a week or two and we'll catch up. But like, yeah. I'm not like we're that. And, but that's just kind of the way I think I'm wired. I think a lot more college guys might be like that. But I think too now, like, with social media and everything, and a lot of the younger generation growing up, I think there is a little bit more buddy-buddy in the sport.
Yeah. Yes.
You know,
it's my unfortunate. Thing is,
I think it's unfortunate. I'm kind of cut from the cloth of like, if you're my opponent, it's, you know, I'd rather bury you under the court than give you a high five, but
good for you.
I love it's, that.
Let me put in my UNC future real quick.
It's right though. I mean,
I'm only kind of kidding. So
there's nothing more like infuriating to somebody as a fan when you watch your team like lose a hard fought game, like Mikey said, and then after the game, it's like, you know, the guys are shrugging it off like it doesn't matter. I'll tell you one thing. I just went to my first UFC event, and that was – you want to talk about guys who want to kill each other and literally try to. That was pretty cool. But I do like that competitive edge, because I think it brings and enhances the game script. I think it makes watching it as an outside objective viewer, it makes a lot more interesting and fun when you see, like – even with playoffs, I think playoffs brings out the best of any sport. You know, you watch even a sport like baseball. It's, you know, they lose 10 games in a row. Nobody cares. But when it's in the playoffs, every pitch counts, every at bat counts, and it intensifies and makes the viewing experience so much better. So I completely agree with you.
100%.
Tick, we got some more questions.
So are we out on the jersey swap then at the end of games? Are we, is that a no-go on the jersey swap?
Doesn't sound, that's a good question.
I wish we had more jerseys to give out. I think my equipment guy would kill us if we gave away our jerseys because we don't have them.
Really? we could
order new ones. Like Jordan is definitely gonna they treat us mighty fine over here. I'll say
sure,
that.
I would imagine.
But
it's a hell of a college, sponsor, let me tell you.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the big fella himself went here, so I mean, it's.
I mean, if you're if Jordan's not going to take care of UNC, they're not taking care of nobody.
Exactly. So. Exactly. But yeah, no, we don't have like we have our jerseys. We're playing in them. So like in the NBA, I think it's a little different. They can kind of give them away, and NFL same thing. But no jersey. I haven't seen a college jersey swap maybe ever. Wow. Maybe ever.
True. That's a good point. Let's do one more. We got one from Quinn Van Gallen. And this is one I'm interested in as well. What's your pregame routine? Any weird superstitions or anything that you're very particular about before a game?
I like that one, Tick.
Yeah, it's a good one. The pregame routine is long and not really by design. It's kind of just how we work as a team. It starts like, so on a game, I'll walk you through. If a game is at 7 p.m. tip off, we're in the building at noon, and we're staying here. And basically you're here, you're getting any sort of treatment, physical treatment, you know, massage, ankle tape, you know, whatever. And we've got shoot around 5 hours before, and pregame meal 4 hours before. And so that's basically pretty standard. And so you do that, you have your shoot around, team shoot around, pregame meal. After that, I'll take a nap. Usually I'll take a nap in our locker room. We've got couches, like, kind of sleep pods, whatever. It's nice, very nice setup. I'll take a nap, usually about 30 minutes, like pretty quick. And then I'll head in to start getting like loose. We do like our lower body prep, which is kind of physical, you know, band work, mobility, stretching. That's usually maybe hour and a half, 2 hours before the game. And then you're getting taped, and then we're on the court, usually 70 minutes before tip off for team stretch. So then you go through the whole team warm up. So like the doors open, the fans can kind of come and gather to watch that. But that's like still over an hour before the game. So like everything kind of gets backed way up because there's just a lot to do. There's a lot to take care of, and everyone wants to check all the boxes. So, it gets a little tedious. I've gotten used to it. Obviously, I've been playing college ball for a long time, but it's not it's kind of crazy. Like in high school, I got class. I got class at 3:30. I got a game at 4. Here we go. Like lace them up. You're on the court. You stretch maybe 5-10 minutes. Take a couple layup lines. You're done. Like you're playing. This is different. Like this is 5-6 hours of just meals, shooting around, prep, what have you. So. It's long, it's a lot, but it's good. I mean, you know, if you're not loose after that, you're in trouble. Like, I don't know what to tell you. But then on the road, it's a little different because you got to travel from the hotel to the arena, which takes some time. You don't have like the access to the court because the other team's got it, whatnot. In the tournament, it's way different. You get 30 minutes on the court. So you got to do all your kind of prep and stretching, like in a back hallway somewhere. So that's like a different, like the tournament format, it is kind of like roll the balls out. You go out there 30 minutes, you do some layup lines, you shoot, you go back to the huddle, you come back out, and then you're playing, you know? So it's a little different tournament format, which I kind of like sometimes. You kind of get ready to roll and just go play. But anyway, kind of a boring answer there, but
I think it's good to give the inside scoop. Yeah. You know, it's kind of cool to hear, you know, from somebody who's not in that, you know, world to hear it. I have one last question for you. Obviously, you grew up in New York and this is your last year, you know, as a senior in college. Who's your like dream NBA team? If you were to pick a team that you'd like to play for, like being from New York, are you like a Knicks fan? Is there a team that would be like a dream come true, like as a kid that you envision playing with?
Yeah, great question. The actual answer, as I go into pre-draft and everything after this year, is like, I'll play for whoever wants me to play for them. Like that's the true answer. But, if we're talking like growing up as a kid, Knicks for sure. Playing at MSG would be unreal. Like we played there once this year. It's just so historic. And the Knicks right now are like, so I'm a Knicks fan. I'm a Jets fan. So my life has been tough. I'm a Mets fan. My life has been tough. Like, I've got a tough trio, but the Knicks are on the up and up and say, so the Jets.
They are.
We stole your boy, Rodgers. It was very sad. Very sad what happened to Rodgers.
He's going to be back.
Yeah, Bob killed Rodgers. So,
yeah, he completely mushed him. It was awful. But the reality is like, yeah, Knicks would be amazing. I love the way the Miami Heat have kind of built their organization. I kind of love the underdog mentality down there. Obviously Miami is a fun city. Good little tax break too, if we're talking about.
Let me tell you.
Yeah. So, but listen, there's a lot of teams and the NBA is in a weird spot too. Cause it's like a lot of teams are flipping the script. Like the Thunder were, everyone was writing them off. Now they're great. They're young.
Minnesota.
Minnesota, you know, even the Magic, like the Orlando Magic are, you know, I think fourth in the East. They're climbing. Sacramento Kings were terrible for years. For years, they were terrible. And then they're making runs in the playoffs. So, like, it's a cool time in the NBA because a lot of franchises are kind of picking up where they hadn't been. So, listen, I'll play for anybody that wants me. So, anyone who's listening can know that. But yeah, the Knicks, maybe Miami, something like that.
I tell you who would love to have you, and that's the Philadelphia 76ers. Special. It's a match made in heaven. You're a Philly
guy. I tell you what, if he goes to the Knicks, though, that would be, I mean, I could go and watch him play all the time. I'm trying to go see him play. It's tough for me, you know, in Jersey with the kids, man. But the Knicks, I mean, that's a Uber ride away. That's a slam dunk, no pun intended. Cormac, we do a segment on the show called He's a Problem. Who's a problem? And who's a problem? It could be a good problem, it could be a bad problem. It's just somebody who has stuck out to you of the last week or so in the sports world. Typically we do sports world, a problem, good or bad. So we could go around the horn. We'll end with you.
Okay.
That way, you know, you could see kind of what we're talking about. So, Tick, do you want to lead off who's the problem this week?
Sure, I'll lead off. So I'm going to go against the grain. I'm not going to stick with sports, mainly because of what's affected me today.
Okay.
This Marriott Bonvoy Wi-Fi.
I hope it cuts out right in the middle.
Right in the middle.
That's a problem.
That would be great. These Sheratons, these Marriotts, they got you by the balls. They don't offer you Wi-Fi unless you're a part of the Bonvoy program. And even when you are a part of that, they tell you, sorry, it's out and it's gone. They need to be better. And I think they will after the fight that I put up tomorrow when I'm checking out.
Good for you.
I'm going to let them have it.
Good for you. Because
we got Cormac on and it threw a wrench in the whole day.
They knew Cormac was coming on. This problem would have got addressed.
And it was such a, this was the last thing we wanted to deal with. But up to this point, it's been all right.
Yeah, it's been fine.
But that's who's a problem this week for me.
Joseph, you want to go or you want me to go?
I'm going to go with not necessarily a person, but a thing. These Tommy John surgeries, elbow injuries, now that's going to affect Gerrit Cole, dude. I'm telling you what, how many pitchers
– selling medical procedures?
I'm not selling the injury. Like, pitchers can't stay healthy anymore. It's unbelievable. It's one of the situations where, like, there was no lead-up that he was hurt. There was no, like, disclosure. And now all of a sudden, the guy might miss the entire year and ruin the entire year for the Yankees. And this happens more often than not, where guys, who's the pitcher for the Mets that had it last year, DeGrom, out for the entire year, Tommy John. It's a shame. It's a fucking, they got to be better with modern day medicine and all the shit that they got today. You can't tell me that they can't prevent a guy who pitches once a week from being out for an entire year with the surgical procedure. It's a problem, Mikey, and you know it. It's a Yankees.
I feel like you're
never played baseball.
I feel like he thinks
I'm not a baseball guy. I'm just saying.
I feel like Gerrit Cole's the problem more so than anything else right now.
I don't want to pin it on him. Poor guy's going through enough.
Poor guy.
I need him.
You're a Yankees guy.
I'm a Mets guy. So,
wow.
No, DeGrom hurt us. I mean, I hear you. I would sell that too. I think those guys would sell it as well.
Imagine you had DeGrom with Scherzer and then what's his name?
Verlander.
My God, you guys would have been unbelievable.
I'm pretty sure any pitcher who's had to undergo Tommy John surgery would sell Tommy John surgery, Joe. Anyone who's undergone the surgery would
Well, I'm selling it.
I'm going to tell you the problem, Joe. And you know, this isn't going to be a surprise for anybody who's followed the program for some time, but I'm sorry. I have to say it. Jake Paul, man. Jake Paul, this Mike Tyson fight.
You've got to end this narrative, man.
No, that's a good stat.
It is, right, Cormac? I mean, listen, Mike Tyson is going to be 58 years old when these guys fight. It's not going to – Joe, listen, Tyson's the baddest motherfucker to ever walk the planet. I'm not debating that. But, I mean, he is 30 years Jake Paul senior. Jake Paul will never be respected in the boxing realm ever. So but honestly, at this point, I don't think he cares. And that's fine because God knows how many millions of dollars he's going to get off of this fight. So I respect the bag grab, but I mean, at what point, and I'm going to watch the fight. I mean, I'm a Netflix subscriber, so I'll watch the fight. I mean, I feel bad for the people that are going to buy Netflix. I feel bad for the people that are going to buy Netflix to watch that fight though. That's ridiculous.
Everybody has Netflix already, Mikey. Don't pretend they don't.
I'm selling Jake. I'm Jake Paul's a problem. Is a problem, Joe. He's got to fight a real fighter. He's got to fight an actual boxer.
Problem, apparently.
I'll tell you what, Mike. We sat behind Logan Paul the other night.
Yeah.
He's shredded.
So what?
Damage you, Mikey.
He would what?
He would kick your ass.
No, he wouldn't.
I think he would.
Logan Paul.
You don't think that Logan Paul would kick your ass?
No.
He's Mikey, are you out of your mind?
He's a glorified ballerina, Logan Paul. That's what he is. Now, Jake Paul's a fighter. What?
How big are these guys?
Jake's got to be a decent sized guy. He fights cruiser light heavyweight, so he fights at like 185, 190.
They're tall kids.
I think they are. Logan Paul's 6'2".
There you go.
This guy's gonna kick my ass, Joe. This guy.
Mikey, that is such an outdated
picture.
Photo,
listen, dude. That's the picture I found. That was the first picture on Google. I can't control Google, John. Cormac, do you have a problem for us?
Yeah, I got a problem. This is a, kind of a random one. I just saw it. It's a thing, too. You might know about it. I mean, there's high school basketball has no shot clock. A lot of states.
It's a good one.
Jersey, I know they don't have it. I'm seeing a video. The team holds the ball the whole quarter. It's an embarrassment to the sport. And I looked it up. There's 8 states that have shot clocks, 8 out of 50.
Yeah, it's bad.
That's bad. That's really bad.
How do they not get fouled or turn the ball over?
Well, so it turns into like a stalemate because the one team's holding it and the other team's in the zone. And they're like, it becomes the whole thing. Like, well, we're not going to come out the zone. And they're like, well, we're not going to shoot it. Yeah. And so it literally got like the moms in the stands cheering.
It happened to me playing in Jersey, Joe. We played in the county tournament when I was in high school, and we went up against a very high seeded team, and we were hanging with them the whole first quarter. And all of a sudden their coach just stopped playing. Like they got like a 6 or 8 point lead, and they just held the ball and they didn't do anything. They didn't pass it. The guy just literally would dribble it, not do anything, and then just hold it, and you can't do anything. Can't do anything. He's right. He's 100% right.
You foul him.
It's a huge problem. It's a huge problem, actually, now that I think about it. I'm getting more wound up about it because the whole thing, too, is like it's lazy coaching because the coaches are just, you know, oh, yeah, we're not going to do anything. And it's bad for the kids, man. Like, you're not teaching these kids how to play within the confines of the shot clock, which is how you're supposed to play in college and in the NBA. And you get these situations that are just complete. It's a clown show. You got two teams staring at each other for 8 minutes straight, and then the buzzer goes off. It's like, what the hell are we doing?
That's awful, man. There's an episode.
Was Massachusetts one of the states with the shot clock?
Well, we had shot clock in Massachusetts, shot clock in New York. So I never dealt with it, but I'm seeing these videos. It's ludicrous. It's unbelievable.
Reminds me of an episode I watched ages ago of The Simpsons. They were showing the soccer announcers, and like the top three guys are just passing the ball back and forth, and they're not moving. And like the American commentator is like, now he passes back to him, and he passes him, and then they show the Latino commentator, and he's like losing his mind, but they're not moving the ball; they're just passing it back and forth. That's literally what it reminds me of. That's outrageous. That's not how basketball is meant to be played. That's a hell of a problem to have.
Yeah, I mean, hey, first problem ever.
First of many, I'm sure.
Yeah. That is a good one. It's a good one. And it's been a problem. I mean, listen, that's a problem that's been around. Like I just said, I mean, I was in high school 20 years ago, believe that or not. I was in high school 20 years ago. That's a problem.
That's a problem. That's a problem for everybody. That's, I mean, the fact you were in high school 20 years ago is also a problem.
This guy's getting a little long in the tooth, Cormac.
Listen.
I'd love to have him back. This is great.
Cormac listen, in 10 years, you'll see. You'll see.
No, I hear you. I'm getting a lot of commentary.
You have to get your balls broken a lot.
Oh, you wouldn't believe. I mean, Mike, look at my, like, you go to my comment section on every post. It's get a job. You're 25. You're a grandpa. I was in, you know, your teammate was in seventh grade when you were. It's like, it's true. It's all true. But it's like, what do you want me to do?
If Cormac Ryan's a grandpa, I'm a fucking dinosaur. And Joe, you should fucking chime in too. You're 38, also 37.
I'm young at heart, Mikey.
All right, Sinatra. Thank you very much. Let me tell you something. Cormac has been nothing but a pleasure.
Yeah, I mean, for our 100th episode, you've been sensational. And I tell you what, if anybody listening to you now isn't rooting for you in the target,
my God,
then they can go get bent, because as far as I'm concerned, you are a guy who we should be rooting for. Absolutely. We really appreciate you taking your time to sit down and chat with us. And you are welcome anytime, especially after you win that March Madness championship. We go do dinner and we can come
do a live episode. We'll do a live episode. Steak dinner.
From the steakhouse.
If UNC makes the Final Four, I will do everything within my power to be there.
Phoenix is not a bad city. Phoenix has got a lot to offer.
You just spent 2 weeks there.
I know. Yeah, we were there. Stranger to Arizona. I mean, you guys are out and about. So,
well, thank you so much, man. We really appreciate
you. Thank
you
very much, Cormac.
Nothing but the best. Best of luck in your tournament, and obviously in the March Madness tournament, we will be rooting vehemently for you.
Thank you, boys. I appreciate it.
We appreciate you, brother. Take care, Cormac Ryan.
I tell you what, man, that young man is well spoken and just a
I'm serious. I'm going all in on UNC to win the tournament. I am. I might too.
I think the guy
just gets it, bro. He's a dog. And he's not the only one. You got Baycott. You got RJ Davis. That team's fucking
RJ
loaded.
Davis is unbelievable. RJ Davis is
loaded, man.
Best scoring UNC guards of all time.
Team may be built for something real magical. Come April.
I love that we got him involved with the who's a problem or what's a problem, because I thought his answer was excellent.
Perfect.
That was one of the best ones we've had in a long time. That was perfect. I tell you what, I was so nervous about my Wi-Fi that entire
time. You were fun. You held up. Yeah, you held fun. I wish you would have chimed in more, Tick.
I just didn't want to talk. I was so nervous because I always hate when I'm watching podcasts and they start cutting out. I get so frustrated, and I didn't want to be that problem on this episode. But Mikey, I thought you did a great job. Sort of leading us through that. Joe, you were great too. And Cormac, he was great, man.
What a guy. I mean, you know what? Like, you get some of these guys, man, and we've been in the game now long enough. Like, you get some of these guys and you want them to come on the pod, but you really never know what you're going to get. Like, he could have very easily, you get guys who show up on their cell phone in a car. I mean, this guy was fucking posted up in front of the fucking logo.
Yeah, the Tar Heel behind
him. I mean, this guy treated it like he was getting interviewed by ESPN. And you know what? That's professionalism.
Hey, all intents and purposes.
No, he's not wrong. Yeah, you're not wrong, Joe. You're not wrong. But I mean, that is something that will establish him, in my opinion, as a man who will always have my respect. I mean, just a kid who you could tell was raised the right way. Says all the right things. He's not a kid. I mean, he's a 25-year-old man. I mean, he's not a kid. Yeah. But best of luck to UNC and the UNC fans. I mean, you guys deserve it. I mean, that team is a very good team. So we'll see.
I'll tell you what, too. I would love to hear, you know, anyone listening in the comments, if you enjoy the interview experience.
Sure.
I thought it was very, I mean, obviously he was great, but I thought it flowed great. And I think it sets a new opportunity for us moving forward as a sportsman.
Yes.
I think it's fun, man. It makes me want to do more of these.
Yeah, and we're looking to add that. So if people really enjoyed the interview and you think it's better to have a guest on every, you know, let's say once a month or something along those lines, we could definitely make that happen between the three of us. So if that's something that you're interested in, please comment and let us know what you thought about it. Are we going to transition to NFL free agency?
Transition here.
I think we could do a quick little bit. I mean,
I know you've been chomping at the bit, Mikey, to get into some of this free agency stuff. So why don't we just jump in, right?
Okay, let's jump right in. Let's jump.
We did viewer questions with Cormac. We did who's a problem. All we have left is one topic, and it's a big topic. I'm sure we could talk a while about it, but let's dive right in. Free agency was crazy this week, but specifically today. A lot of moves. I don't know who we want to start with, but there's Saquon, Josh Jacobs, D'Andre Swift, a bunch of guys. Why don't we start with Saquon? Because he's probably one of the bigger names, along with Chris Jones sticking around in KC. Saquon to Philadelphia.
How do you feel about it, Tick?
Listen, I love Saquon. He's a friend of yours. I've only heard the greatest things about him. He played at Penn State. That was the school I loved growing up. I love everything about him outside of that he was a New York Giant for such a long time. I wonder truly how much of an upgrade it is from D'Andre Swift, because he had a great
Chicago Bear D'Andre Swift.
I know. I wonder how much of an up, if that was a position we even really needed an upgrade in tremendously. And even D'Andre Swift has got as good as he was. We just stopped running the football at the end of the year. So even if Saquon's on the team and we decide to stop running the football, how's that going to work? We just lost one of the best centers in football. It's going to be certainly not as good as a line as we had last year. I'm so questioning it. I'm obviously excited because he's an unreal talent, but I'm questioning how much better the team got.
I mean, they got significantly better ticket. I mean, you have a premier running back who for the last, 2 to 3 years has been facing stacked boxes because, quite frankly, teams don't respect, the quarterback and the wide receivers that the New York Giants were playing with.
Bottom five of the league in quarterback play, one of the worst offensive lines.
He's going to one of the, I know you lost Kelsey, but he's going to one of the better offensive lines in the league with,
I don't know that
with Jalen Hurts, who is a running quarterback that you got to respect that. And then he's got great wide outs on both ends. I think it's going to open up holes that he is going to be able to gash and be very successful. And not to mention his pass catching ability out of the backfield in the last couple of years has really improved. I think he's going to be a great weapon for you guys. I think he's going to be awesome. And by the way, Mikey, from a reliable source that I have, I heard it came down to the wire. They went with the Eagles eventually, but it was the Bears and Eagles were the two teams that he was going to go to.
It was Bears, Texans, Eagles, from what I understand. Yeah.
But the last two, from what I understand, was the Bears and Eagles. And ultimately, and apparently the Packers made a play late and offered a big play at him too, but it was too late. So
yeah, I got to be honest. I'm glad the Bears didn't splash on Saquon, only because, not that I don't think he's a tremendous player. I think he is a tremendous player when he's healthy and when he's on the field. I just think the Bears just, they need to spend their money elsewhere, in my opinion. So I was happy with the Swift deal. It wasn't that crazy of a deal. So I was happy about that. But Saquon to the Eagles, man. Listen, the Giants fans are going to have no lost love for Saquon now because, he goes to the arch rival. Him and Tiki Barber are going back and forth on Twitter. I mean, it's ugly. It's ugly. But Tiki Barber shouldn't have said what he said. Like, he shouldn't have said.
Tiki Barber to be talking anyway.
Yeah, Tiki Barber really shouldn't have went there. But, Tiki Barber, you got to understand now, is in that radio shock jock mode. He's on the afternoon drive on The Fan, which is the biggest, that's the biggest radio show other than the morning show, Boomer and Geo. That is the afternoon drive is the biggest sports radio spot in the country if you're New York afternoon drive. So he's gonna say stuff just to grab headlines. I think that if Tiki really that was just so ridiculous. But overall, I mean, Eagles locked up Landon Dickerson, which I think was gigantic for them. They paid him a lot of money, but they had to make sure that O-line was still going to be in somewhat tact. But now, man, the pressure on Jalen Hurts. Now you got Slim Reaper out there. You got A.J. Brown out there. You got Dallas Goedert out there. You got Saquon out there. Man, you are talking about some of the most talented guys at their respective positions across the entire field now.
I can't do it now.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a lot of pressure on him. It's going to be a lot of pressure. And, it's going to be a matter of, can he do it? Is the play calling going to be right? Are they going to, really rely on Saquon, or are they going to kind of, do what they did with Swift and kind of tease it a little bit? But I
hope they don't.
I think they're going to use him a lot. But the running backs,
today just flew off the board. You had Saquon, you had Josh Jacobs.
Right now, Mikey, you see this?
Yeah, I saw Mixon got cut, which I said was going to happen last week. I tweeted that.
Zach Moss just signed a deal with 2-year deal with the Bengals.
Zach Moss, and you got Eckler going to the Commanders.
How about Josh Jacobs coming to the Packers?
Yep. I mean, there was a lot of, and Derrick Henry still doesn't have a home. Derrick Henry still on
sign. Aaron Jones a free agent now.
Yep. So it's going to be very interesting. It's going to be very interesting with the running backs. But I think, you know what this means really traditionally in free agency, if one position is getting hammered often, it's because the draft class really doesn't provide that much in the regard of whatever position it is, respectfully. So the running back position, I think this speaks to the level of running back class coming out in this draft, why all these running backs all of a sudden started getting snagged up today as soon as the opening bell, if you want to call it, for the tampering period started.
But why the only – so a lot of these things make sense to me. The Joe Mixon being released thing, he is a premier talent. I don't understand why – they would want to let him go other than to free up space. But they did. So moving on, Joe, you want to talk a little bit about Josh Jacobs to the Packers? Do you think it makes you better? Do you like the move? How do you feel about it?
It's tough, man, because Aaron Jones in many ways embodied Green Bay in so many ways. He was the leader of that team. He'd been there through thick and thin. He was committed to being a Packer for ultimately, I think, as far as his career went, just a hard-nosed, hard-working guy, great attitude. It's going to be really tough to see him go. That being said, you know, his contract was coming up. I don't know if they just couldn't come to a negotiation with him. And he's also been banged up the last several years. You know, like, he hasn't played a full year, you know, and they've been throwing out A.J. Dillon there. So maybe they were a little bit concerned.
Health-wise, I mean, Joe, you hate A.J. Dillon, so.
A.J. Dillon is not it. He's a free agent, and I don't think they're going to re-sign him. But I'm saying that Aaron Jones was hurt much of the year this year. And if you go back to the year before, he was also hurt. So they had to play A.J. Dillon a lot, and they had to get him mixed. And even when they had Aaron Jones a few years ago as kind of like the bell cow, he got hurt late in the season in the playoffs. And, you know, we really didn't have anybody else. I think they need a guy who can be a bell cow running back. Now, I understand Jacobs was hurt this year, but if you look throughout his career, he's been able to play a majority of his seasons, and he's been very successful and shown that he can run the ball 20 to 30 times in a game and do damage. And I think that's exactly what they need. Plus, he's like 3 or 4 years younger than Aaron Jones. He's 25. I think they're going to use him a lot. My only hope is that he stays healthy. And if he does, I think he could be a big dynamic piece for us. But that being said, I'll really miss Aaron Jones. He was a great player for us for a long time.
If they're going to let Jones and Dillon walk, I mean, Jacobs is going to get a lot of work. I mean, they're paying him a lot of money. I mean, listen, they're paying him a lot. I mean, I don't want to say more money than I would like to pay him, because I don't want to make it sound like I'm just being anti-Packer. But between him and Xavier McKinney today, the Packers invested a lot of money in two positions that, you know, but the Bears did the same thing. I mean, not to the degree that the Packers did. They did not spend the same amount of money, not nearly on Byard and Swift. But it's very ironic, I think, that the Bears and Packers both start off with adding a safety and a running back in free agency. It's just funny how things like that work
McKinney
out.
McKinney is a gamer, though, man.
No, yes, he's a baller. Good. He's a baller, no doubt about it.
Very, very.
D'Andre Swift, I would be over the moon if I was you about D'Andre Swift, man.
No, I think Swift will be good. I loved him in Philly last year. I always was saying I don't understand why they don't give the guy the ball. He looked awesome last year.
I know, and before that in Detroit, he did have some injury history, but you know, if he can stay healthy the same way he did last year, I think you got a real nice back on your hands, as long as you make some offensive line decisions there and maybe improve that a little bit. What else we got? We got Chris Jones. We were talking a lot about him. He ended up staying in KC.
How about Cousins to Atlanta?
Cousins to Atlanta. Jerry, that is, the Browns.
I told you.
That is crazy.
There is no market for Justin Fields. None. There is none. It's non-existent.
I'll take him.
You would, but there's one of two things happening with Justin Fields right now.
either there's no market for him. No market. When I say no market, I mean a realistic market. The Bears are not going to trade Justin Fields for a sixth or seventh round draft pick.
No,
they would be better served, even a fifth rounder. They'd be better served to just keep him at that point. And they don't have to pay him much. It's the last year of his rookie deal. They're not going to do the fifth year option. So there's either two things happening. There's no realistic market or fair market for him, or the Bears aren't shopping him. Rappaport said today that the Bears, they had no intention of shopping him up until this point, which is exactly what I said on Friday on Twitter that got me completely wrapped up into this two-day-long back and forth with a million people on Twitter going nuts about me saying that. But the fact remains, the Falcons were supposed to be the suitor. No. Tampa Bay, we were supposed to figure out with Baker. He's staying there. The Steelers were supposed to be a suitor. They went with Russell Wilson on a $1 million deal. The Raiders were supposed to... What? What? $1.2 million on the league minimum they're paying Russell Wilson.
Oh, my God.
Well, they're paying him nothing.
Is he's getting paid out on the, on
yes,
the other?
Yes. Then the Raiders were supposed to be the next suitor for Fields. They literally, NFL people who get paid to do this for a living, put out that Justin Fields and the Raiders were in serious trade talks. I am not exaggerating. 3 minutes later, Gardner Minshew gets brought in by the Raiders. So,
yeah, but is he going to be a starter there?
This, yeah, of course. Well, he's going to battle with Aiden O'Connell for the starting position. But here's this is what I'm saying. Who is going to be the suitor now for Justin Fields? The Vikings? I don't see the Bears trading him inside the division. I think it would be very foolish to do that, especially if the return's not going to be big enough. Who else? The Giants, maybe? The Broncos, maybe?
Yeah, the Giants,
but maybe. The main suitors who everyone said, he's going to go there, he's going to go there. He's not there. He's not there. And every day that passes that he's not traded.
By the way, Tampa was another team too, and they re-signed Baker Mayfield.
That's what I said. One. Yep.
I don't know
who should be looking at him is Seattle. Seattle.
That's another team that they had discussed. Yep.
Because Geno Smith ain't it, man. He ain't it.
They seems, fine with him though. They don't seem to be trying to make a move there, which is baffling. But they're not. That's a bad. I mean, we've got Austin Eckler to Washington. I don't know if we think that's worth talking about.
What about T. Higgins requesting a trade? I mean, that really is interesting because
feed me T. Higgins, but man, we don't have the capital to grab him. I don't think they'd have to trade a future second.
What about the Jets? Imagine the Jets get T. Higgins with Garrett Wilson and then Aaron Rodgers.
They definitely need another wide out. They lost they lost their pass rusher Bryce Huff today, but they have an embarrassment of riches on defense, so I don't think that's big of a deal for the Jets. Tell you who made out today is the New York Giants with Brian Burns. They stole Brian Burns from Carolina, a second round pick and a fifth round pick for a guy who Carolina didn't want to give up for two first round picks only a season ago. They didn't want to give this guy up for two first rounders. This season, they give him up for a second and a fifth. Now, the Giants are overpaying Brian Burns. They're giving him $150 million, 80-something guaranteed. But that's the league. I mean, the league just overpays for guys in free agency. That's the way it always goes. But in terms of compensation for on the pick end, I think that the Giants stole Brian Burns from Carolina. So that, in addition to a couple offensive linemen that Giants just brought in, including one of Joe's Packers, John Runyon, they brought in. The Giants are making some low-key nice moves. They still need a ton of wide receiver help. They have none. And they, of course, the quarterback now. They bring in Devin Singletary to replace Saquon Barkley. I think they overpaid Singletary a little bit too. But again, that's kind of just the way free agency goes.
How about the Raiders taking Wilkins off the Miami?
Now that's a major deal, man. That's a major deal.
Shit.
And that's a guy that I would have loved to see Chicago, but Chicago's never going to pay anybody $110 million. But him paired with Max Crosby now, I mean, listen, they got those Pat Mahomes rules, man. They want to punish Pat. I think that Antonio Pierce is hell-bent on, if nothing else, to make that team be the thorn in Patrick Mahomes' side moving forward. I think everything he's going to do in the draft and otherwise is going to revolve around one thing and one thing only:
getting enough guys on that defense to smother Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. And you know what? Hats off to him, because whatever they did last year, it worked, and he turned it around a little bit there. So exciting times over there in Vegas if you're a Raider fan, I think. It's pretty cool to see.
Bro, all the Carolina Panthers do is get fleeced. Oh, they send top-tier talent away fucking tires. They for nothing. I mean, Christian McCaffrey, DJ Moore, and now Brian Burns. I mean, why even draft? Why, if you're just going to sell them for scraps? It's tough. All right, gentlemen, we touched on some free agency there, but this episode was about Cormac Ryan. He was a real treat. It was the first real guest we've had, certainly the first athlete guest we've had. Mike, I thought you did a great job sort of leading that, and just what a fun time. And yeah, like Joe said earlier, let us know in the comments if you liked it, if you want to see more of that, because we can certainly make this happen at least once a month while we're waiting for next football season. And we'll continue to talk about March Madness and baseball and all these other sports. But if you like the interview style, let us know. Let us know for sure. Gentlemen, that's another episode of The Sportsman. Mikey, I thank you for helping with the connect with Cormac, having him on the show. A lot of fun. That's Mikey V. That's Joey D. Make sure you guys like, comment, subscribe to the YouTube and the Instagram. Send your questions in there, and Mr. Anderson will send them back to us. We'll answer them at the end of each episode. That's another one, guys. Till next week.